Friday, April 13th, 2012. I'm Jordy Morgan. Welcome to Maritime Morning. Rick Howe's going to join me at 11 o'clock for the Friday face-off. I'm sure he'll be delighted to see the poll today that shows the NDP and the Conservatives federally in a statistical tie. Unfortunately for him, an election is 3 years away. Plus, we're going to open up the phone lines to talk about anything you'd like today. Coming up in a few minutes, historian Blair Bead will be joining us to talk about the people visiting our city to commemorate the sinking of the Titanic. And we're going to ask this. Should the Titanic site itself be considered sacred ground? Should it be preserved? Also this week, the U.S. has an auction going on. There's one going on down there. Thousands of artifacts are being auctioned off of the Titanic. Interestingly, a majority of people in Northern Ireland don't think it should be happening. We're going to ask the question, how do you feel? But first, the 1997 film Titanic has provided the foundation for most people's impressions of the disaster. It was designed as a love story with the disaster as a backdrop. But James Cameron's meticulous attention to detail has defined the event in many people's minds. Titanic has been re-released in 3D to mark the 100th anniversary. Well, James Cameron joins us this morning to talk about the film and the disaster. Good morning, Mr. Cameron. A lot of people made the state of the wreck as a memorial. What's your position on people or groups that are recovering artifacts from the Titanic?
Yeah, I do. I don't kind of hold with this kind of fundamentalist view that it's a sacred site and shouldn't be disturbed at all. You know, I believe that going down there, obviously I've done films there. I believe that imaging the wreck is important for the world to remember the tragedy. I also think that artifacts brought up from the debris field where the ship just kind of split open like a pinata and scattered this stuff across the muddy ocean bottom is not violating a grave site. As you guys well know from in Halifax, most of the people who died in Titanic died of hypothermia at the surface, you know, floating in life jackets, and a lot of their bodies were recovered and are now interred, you know, at the Titanic cemetery in Halifax. So I don't think of it kind of like, you know, grave robbing. And I think that the bringing back of those artifacts and letting people see whether it's the contents of somebody's wallet or the spectacles that they wore, it puts you in touch with the human stories. I think it makes history real, and it helps us remember.
Mm. Your telling of the Titanic story was a romance. It did have a remarkable right. overlay of history, but, you know, at the same time, it was a dreadful tragedy. And I'm wondering if you feel you've kind of recontextualized this story for most people.
Well, people need a way into it, and I mean, certainly there will always be those of us that are fascinated by the history, the real history and the real people who were aboard and the richness of that story. But I felt that for a mass audience, people need a doorway into it. They need a way to feel the event, and you know, certainly it was a heartbreaking tragedy, and I felt that I could give myself more permission with a fictional story. Otherwise, I'd be changing. I didn't want to change Molly Brown's story or Helen Churchill Candy's story or something to try to fabricate a love story that didn't exist. So, you know, I created a fictional one. But I think that it's in a way an avenue to truth, because by falling in love as an audience with Jack and Rose and feeling that sense of loss at the end, when Jack dies, we feel what the overall sense of tragedy of the event.
Well, people get a chance to fall in love with it all over again. It's been released in 3D. My understanding is this was not entirely a pleasant experience recreating this film. What are your thoughts about the result you got?
Well, look, I can't say I love the process because it was incredibly time-consuming and painstaking, and you know, it was 300 people working for 14 months to convert the film into high-quality 3D. But I certainly love the result. It's really a pleasure to watch. The film has never looked better. Even in its original release, we digitally remastered it at 4K resolution. We cleaned up the grain, we've sharpened the edges and really retouched all the color. So the film looks gorgeous, and then it's also in 3D. So it has that sense of vibrancy and immediacy that you get from seeing depth in the images as well.
Well, my understanding is that the reviews have been quite good. I heard Pete Travers say that from Rolling Stone magazine that it's an exceptional and amazing thing to watch. I mean, it was the first time around, so I'm certain that it will be even more so this time. Looking forward to seeing it myself. I just wanted to veer off for a moment, if you don't mind, and talk a little bit about your deep sea exploration. I mean, you've recently been 35,700-odd feet into a Challenger Deep in the Mariana Trench.
Right.
What is this affliction you have with finding yourselves deep beneath the ocean surface?
You know, look, when I was a kid, my heroes weren't sports heroes or you know, rock stars. They were guys like Jacques Cousteau and you know, space explorers, the Apollo astronauts. I mean, for me, there's nothing more exciting than the idea of getting to go someplace and see places that no other human being has ever seen. And you know, we worked for 7 years to design and build this vehicle to start opening up this this deep frontier. You know, there's a the last frontier for exploration on this planet is in these what they call hadal depths, you know, down in these deep ocean trenches. And in the aggregate, it's an area the size of the continental United States or Australia. It's a whole continent that exists on this planet. Even in the age of Google Maps, where you can sort of Google any place on the surface of the Earth, you can't Google the deep ocean, and we don't know what's down there if we don't go and look.
Well, it's a delight to have you down there looking for us, and certainly your eyes have been bringing us some wonderful things over the last number of years, and we're very grateful for you taking a little time to spend with us on the anniversary of the Titanic. Thanks again.
Well, it's my pleasure. Yeah, and I know that you know, Halifax is a very particular place in the history of Titanic, you know, because of that's where so many of the bodies were brought back to, and so I know that you guys are going to be respectful in your observance of the 100-year memorial.
Thanks again.
Okay, Jordy. Thanks. Nice talking to you.
That is filmmaker James Cameron joining us this morning. We're going to take a quick break. Blair Beed will be joining us on the phone as well. We're going to talk about the victims in the Halifax graveyard. He's been running some tours over the course of the last number of days with people who have been visiting the city. We'll find out about those folks, their thoughts, and we'll be getting yours on all of this later on this hour here on Maritime Morning. Welcome back to Maritime Morning. I'm Jordy Morgan, and we are talking Titanic. It was nice to have James Cameron spend a little time with us to do that. And certainly, he has contextualized the entire event for a great many people through the film that he made in 1997. Prior to that, people sporadically would show up, drop into the graveyard to see the names of the people who had died in the tragedy, the ones that were buried here in Halifax, but certainly not to the degree that they have since that time. And obviously, because it's the 100th anniversary, we've seen a tremendous number of people showing interest in the graveyards. One of the people, perhaps the primary person who has been guiding people through that experience, has been historian Blair Beed. He has been running bus tours and tours of the cemetery, and he joins us this morning on Maritime Morning. Good morning, Blair.
Good morning.
Tell me about the folks that you've been encountering over the course of the last number of days, the folks from the cruise ship and other people who have been interested in it. Anybody in particular who has struck you with questions or experiences that they've told you about?
Well, it's more of a general feeling. Yesterday I had two gentlemen who booked on the ship and live in different parts of the United States, and they wanted a tour, and sort of they were my focus. And one of them was a lawyer, and he works with the Ballard Foundation, which, of course, is the fellow who actually found the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
But afterwards I was signing books, and people were coming up, and they were from South Africa, Puerto Rico, Malta, across the United States. A lot of them were from places like Nebraska, which, you know, have no ocean. and so they were talking, but as they were talking, having now seen the grave sites in Halifax, they're getting back on their ship, and they're actually going to the real grave site, the site where it happened, and where so many were lost who were never found. And it was genuine emotion. It wasn't, oh, we're going to go down the Titanic bouncy castle slide or anything like that. It was just genuine emotion that they wanted to be part of this, even though most of them didn't have any relationship whatsoever to people on the Titanic.
I was watching an interview with a woman whose, I guess it was a grandfather, perhaps great-grandfather, who died in the disaster. The I guess the grandmother or great-grandmother, and I'm sorry, I'm not clear which, had survived, and obviously because the family continued on. And she was talking about this connection that she had with the event, with the person, with, you know, as being part of a family. And I found it interesting because I'm wondering if you've noticed that this connection with the event has been amplified, if you will, since 1997, the release of the film, and perhaps even more so now with the 100th anniversary.
Well, I started in tours 39 years ago, and I didn't know very much. And, of course, the Titanic story was an easy one to fill in time with. And people came, and I would take them, but they didn't really know they were going. But since the movie, it's become part of the reason they're here. Titanic, then Halifax, rather than, I'm in Halifax, and, oh, I hear a story about Titanic. And that was since the movie. And, of course, this week, there are people staying in hotels from Ireland and England and Australia and coming on these cruise ships, and it's a deliberate wanting to be here for the 100th anniversary. And a lot of them are great nieces and nephews or great-greats, because we've gone through two generations already of people connected to the story of Titanic.
Well, people must feel connected to it. I mean, if you're going to cough up $10,000 to, and I'm not saying that all the tickets cost that much, but they did run up to that level to go through this experience, I mean, that's a pretty significant outlay.
And it's true, because, of course, there were the people who put out the big money to be on that ship, and then the last-minute bookers got a really good deal. But it is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. It will never happen again in many lifetimes. So people had this connection. And, you know, Belfast, where I was last year, they have that big museum. Southampton's opened a big museum. But Halifax doesn't have the big museum. We have the actual evidence that these people existed and their families inscribed notes on the gravestone so that future generations could come and pay respects. And that gives us sort of something that nowhere else has.
Blair, tell me a little bit about the graveyards themselves and the burial sites. What if someone was to go on your tour, what would they experience?
Well, the White Star Line would pay for the plots in three cemeteries. There are 10 buried in the Jewish cemetery up on Windsor Street. A few blocks away, Mount Olivet Cemetery, are 19 who are identified as Roman Catholic. And then the largest burial site is next to the Jewish one, and it's Fairview Lawn Cemetery. And there's 121 people buried in four rows that is famous for the curving of the row that makes it look like the bow of a ship. And then you basically walk from stone to stone, and many of them are... 40 of them are just died April 15th, 1912, and the body number. And that is what moves people, just seeing that.
I know that the Jack Dawson stone has probably been the most compelling, or perhaps it's been one of the most compelling that that people want to go see. What do you talk about the real Jack Dawson as opposed to the James Cameron Jack Dawson when you talked about to people about this?
Two men who've brought attention to Halifax recently. One would be Sidney Crosby, and the other is Jack Dawson, the fictional character in the movie, who is not buried in Halifax, but who has his name on a stone because a fellow named Joseph Dawson was considered lucky to have gotten a job shoveling coal on Titanic. In his 20s, he was out of the British Army, a strong young fellow, and here he was shoveling coal to move the largest moving object in the world across the ocean to New York, and he probably came out of the heat of the engine room area and gets on deck and would die of the cold of the North Atlantic. And, of course, that's like the character in the movie. And but he's buried in Halifax because, as a crew member, the White Star Line is not paying to send them home. And so they don't even pay to put his name on the stone because all they have is the J for Joseph. and it becomes Jay Dawson. And then after the movie, suddenly, especially young women who've seen the movie, come to this stone, and even when you tell them the story of the coal trimmer and the shoveling the coal, to them it's the grave of Jack from the movie.
Well, another one of the very famous stones is also the unknown child that was buried. And subsequently, we've seen through the work of Alan Ruffman and others that child was identified. How do people respond to that when they see it? Is that something that you note when you're showing people around?
Always I've noted it, because the stone itself says to the unknown child of the Titanic, and that represents the 53 children under the age of 10 lost in the sinking. And just that part of the story moves people. I didn't think they should dig up the grave. I was quite contented with the unknown child, and Alan Ruffman and the scientists were content with trying to figure out who he is. Ironic, 3 days before my book revision went to the publisher, the great niece writes me from the United States and says, "Oh, I'm the great niece of the newly discovered Sidney Leslie Goodwin. I'm coming on the cruise ship. I'd like to meet you. By the way, here's his picture if you can ever use it." And of course, it went right into my book reprint. Just the talk of the fact, whether it was the Swedish boy or the Finnish boy or the final decision that it's the English boy, all of them died on board Titanic with not only their parents but their siblings. And you can just imagine a family grouping waiting on deck, waiting for someone else to take charge, hoping for something to happen, and they all die in the ocean. And that is a story that sort of moves everybody when they're at the gravesite.
Mm. You're so close to the disaster on a human level that I think the romance, perhaps, of the story may not have quite as much impact. Perhaps it does. I don't know with you specifically. But talking with James Cameron, and we did talk to him a few minutes ago about the idea that, you know, his story was one of romance, and there is another much deeper tragedy here. The site itself, I'm interested in your thoughts because you deal with the direct memorials that we have here in Halifax so often. Do you think that the site of the disaster is sacred ground? Do you think that the wreck itself is something that should be seen as such?
The site itself is sort of one that I certainly don't mind that they dive down to have a look. I think it's some of the scraping up of items off the bottom. We don't learn anything new in science. We learn something new about the hull and its construction and how 100 years under the ocean has been affecting it. But bringing up a necklace or a pair of shoes that somebody died in is really not, to me, of importance, because we know what people had on board. We know what they had. So, but as a personal grave site, there's nobody else left who had a direct relative sort of one generation away that they lived at the same time as the people who died. So it's sort of gone away a bit, and some people consider it's like the pharaohs, we'll dig them up and put them on display. But I've always remained that I don't agree with that. Take a photograph and move on. At the cemeteries in Halifax, you can read the inscription, take a photograph, and move on. And that's the way to pay respect.
Mm. Tell me, Blair, just about the tours that you're doing. Maybe if people are interested in doing it over the weekend. I know there's lots of events going on. Tomorrow, I was talking earlier this morning with Ken Pinto, who's been organizing things here. We've got a couple of events happening down on the waterfront, and then there's a procession and whatnot. And Gordon Pinsent's going to be hosting a deal at the Grand Parade tomorrow evening as well. But if people want to integrate perhaps a graveyard tour with that, how would they find you, and how do they go about doing it, and is there any room left?
There is room left, because people were calling me and saying, are you going to do a tour? And so I hired motor coaches so that we could do the tour, and I'll be conducting them twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday. And people go to the Carrefour Emporium Atlantic bookstore at Historic Properties, and they can pay for the tours. I had one already that sold out to a railway group. They're coming by train, and they're staying over in Halifax, and they're doing the Titanic tour. So they're not only train enthusiasts, but they have a Titanic interest. But the rest is open to the general public for $25 a ticket to pay for the motor coach. And so there is room on all four times. The last one is filling up, because that one we're going to stay at the cemetery for the 3 o'clock service on Sunday, so it's a little longer tour, but the other ones last about 2 hours, and it's sort of an education to these sites they keep hearing about in the media, and then the gravesites themselves that we'll visit. So I'll be able to add those stories that I know to their actual trip.
Just tell me a little bit about the service on Sunday. I've only got about 30 seconds left, but what's that going to entail?
It is meant to be a religious service based on what was done at the gravesite for the committal of the bodies. And there was a military band, so there will be a band. There will be prayers from Catholic, Protestant, Jewish representatives, because that happened at the time of the burials. And it really is Halifax's way to give a really dignified look to what we're doing. We don't want everybody to think, oh, well, they're just doing it for tourism or to sell their books or whatever. But this is really the one occasion where you can pay a public tribute to these people.
Well, Blair, I'm sure it's been a particularly engaging week and will be a very engaging weekend for you. And we appreciate you taking some time to share your thoughts with us today.
And thank you so much for the call.
That's local historian Blair Bead, who will be offering up some guided tours of the Titanic victims in Halifax graveyards over the weekend. We have an update coming up in just a moment with news, what's going on in the world, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk with the curator of the Nova Scotia Museum System. They have a new display that has been put together down at the Maritime Museum of the Atlantic to deal with the boats that actually went up, the ships that went out and recovered bodies from the disaster site, as we continue with our Titanic Hour here on Maritime Morning.